Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic.
It is my pleasure to welcome back Ricky Smith to the podcast. Welcome back, Ricky.
Thank you. Appreciate it, James.
So, Ricky, many people know of you, your books, your presentations, your papers, your articles, all of those great things. But aside from all of those great things you've done in maintenance and reliability, you are currently with World Class Maintenance. All right. Now, very simple introduction. You know, Rules of Thumbs for Maintenance and Reliability Engineers is a book that comes to mind that you helped author. What else can you tell us about yourself and your time in maintenance and reliability?
Well, I've been in maintenance and reliability since 1972 when I went into U.S. Army. And I became a heavy equipment mechanic. From that, after my tour in the Army, went to work for Exxon at a refinery as a maintenance technician. And then I left there and went to work for a company called Alumex, which later became Alcoa Mount Holly, where basically was where my foundation for maintenance and reliability began, because this plant was one of a few in the world ever certified as world class. So it was interesting there, you know, what I learned, and to set the foundation for the rest of my life as a maintenance supervisor, a maintenance manager, a maintenance engineering leader, and then later as a consultant and educator. But that's kind of where my life has gone over the years. Wrote a lot of books because of my frustration about, you know, people not having the knowledge they needed, or books that kind of take them off track, not focus on best practices. So my focus has always been about around best practices. And also sharing information. I mean, if you're on LinkedIn with me, you know I share a lot of information because I try to help people.
Yes, absolutely. I remember when I was first starting out on my journey, I think I emailed you a bunch of different times, different questions on maintenance planning, procedures, criticality, all those different things. And you're always willing to share.
Absolutely.
Now, what we're going to talk about today is best practices in maintenance procedures. All right. But before we dive into what makes up a maintenance procedure or a best-in-class maintenance procedures, what is a maintenance procedure to begin with? Where do we need them? Why do we need them?
Well, one is human-induced failures is so high. I mean, it talks about 80 to 90% studies have proven that 80 to 90% of equipment failures are human-induced. So what that tells me, and it should tell anyone, I mean, it's just logical, that if we don't have a procedure, that means every time that we complete whatever that task is in maintenance, then we have a chance for error, because our human error is so high. Our memory is not very good as humans. So we have to have something to recall a memory. So a procedure is there to make sure, one, you know, that we have something to follow, to give us instructions. The other is, if we have failure, the worst thing can happen is we go back and modify the procedure. So this isn't about being robots. This is about making sure we meet the intent of operations, production, maintenance, and reliability. I learned this one thing at Alcoa Mount Holly. One of the things that we had to have, that we had there, was all repeatable procedures. If you did not follow the repeatable procedure, this was a condition of employment. I know it sounds hardcore, but, you know, at that plant, I mean, we were running a $1 billion plant in the 1980s and still running today and still producing at the lowest cost. So you tell me, I mean, we really have to have repeatable procedures in order to have continuous improvement and to mitigate failures.
All right. Excellent. So we need repeatable procedures so we can mitigate failures. But one of the common comments I get around maintenance procedures is, we hired skilled people. Why do we need these procedures if we hired skilled people?
I had that comment from someone last week. We hired skilled people. We tested them. They're all trained. I said, okay. So So let's just take it real simple. Have you ever walked out of your house to get in your car and you left your car keys inside? So think about going out to a piece of equipment. I know how to do it. I don't need a procedure. I've done it 1,000 times. Well, out of 1,000 times you've conducted that task, whatever that is, how many times, what percentage of time have you done it to specification? Because maintenance is when we put equipment in a controlled state, we do certain things to it to get an expected outcome. And the expected outcome is process and asset reliability.
All right. So we need that. We need those procedures to make sure we get that expected output. It's done consistently. It's done repeatably. So if we have an issue, we can go back, figure out where that issue is, correct it. And it's not to replace skilled people. It's to make sure that we don't forget those things that we always forget.
Exactly. And it's, you know, if you want a training program for people, new technicians coming in, even if they're trained, they don't know your equipment. So having that procedure brings them up to speed much faster than if you say, go hang out with Jimmy. Jimmy will show you what to do.
Absolutely. You know, we get them up to speed quicker. They're not going to make those mistakes when they learn. Now, what are the requirements of having an effective maintenance procedure? How many are there? What do we need to do?
When I tell people, if you don't have any, first start off with some general procedures, like things that maintenance staffs that are performed on a regular basis, changing the V-belt, simple tasks. You can go online and download Gates V-belt maintenance manual, and you can write your own procedure. But your procedure needs to be step-by-step instructions. Doesn't need to be long and lengthy. It really needs no more than a noun, adjective, and a verb. Need to have some specifications on it. And if Google online, you can Google online, repeatable procedure, Ricky Smith, CMRP, and you'll probably see examples on there of a procedure. But so we need to have those things in order to make sure that new people come in and they're trained.
All right. Excellent. Now, you mentioned that we're going to include a noun, an adjective, a verb, some specifications. So what are we really including on this procedure? Is it very simple sentences with that performance specification? Is it every single step we have to take? What are we putting on this thing?
It's everything that's required in order to maintain it. Let's say you own a V-belt, for example. Inspect V-belt. What does that mean? But if it's on a shutdown, essentially you're going to check deflection and tension. And you're going to inspect for wear. But you have to have on that procedure, what is deflection? What should the deflection and tension be? And if the deflection and tension is not this, then what do I do? Do I write it up? Do I write a procedure to come back and change it? Or do I change it then? So it's simple. Keep it clear. It's not something that you got to be a rocket scientist to figure out. Take your best maintenance technicians and they can work through this. It's very simple.
All right. Excellent. Now, who's going to be writing this procedure? Is it your best maintenance technicians and a maintenance planner? Is it the maintenance planner, maintenance supervisor? Who's going to write this procedure?
Only technicians, not a maintenance supervisor, not a planner, maintenance technicians, because I want their name on the bottom saying they're the originator of that document. So if someone has a question, if another technician, they can go to say, Jimmy wrote the procedure, and say, hey, Jimmy, what's going on with this procedure? Well, and then we got cross-functional teams working that we're educating each other.
All right, so we got our technicians, you know, training each other cross-functionally. They have someone they can go ask the questions because their name is on the bottom of the procedure. Now, where are we keeping all these?
Should be in the CMMS, EAM, the Enterprise Asset Management or Computerized Maintenance Management System. And they should be, you can have some general procedures first, but then they need more specific to an asset. So when a PM or corrective maintenance procedure, procedure comes out, work order comes out, then the procedure can be attached to it. Now, the procedure doesn't have to be in a CMMS, it's best, but at least that work order needs to have on it, where do you pull the procedure from? The planner then pulls that procedure and attaches it to the work order.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out iridicio.com for a free copy of their ebook, A Smarter Way of Preventative Maintenance. This ebook will allow you to review your current maintenance program and eliminate the non-value-added work you are doing which is most likely causing you more downtime than it is preventing. www.iridicio.com.
Yeah, I've seen organizations where they have it in Microsoft Word on a shared drive, but it's linked through the CMMS so they can click on it if they need it, all those different things. Now, once we get the technicians to write those procedures, they create the initial draft, they upload it to the CMMS or to a central drive or whatever the case may be. Do we need to actually test this thing to make sure it's going to work and give us the results we want, or can we just start handing it out right off the bat?
That's a good question. You know, when it has to be, I mean, for them to write it, they don't put it in CMMS. The only person who could put that in CMMS should be the maintenance planner, but the maintenance supervisor should have the signature authority on it saying, and I agree with this procedure. So it is that the maintenance technician wrote it, we're going to do it. We need to have some signature authority. We need to have some control. The control comes from the maintenance plan.
All right, excellent. Now, are we going to go test this though? Is the supervisor, before he signs off, going to walk through with the technician to make sure it delivers the results? Or is he just going to review it and that's good enough?
It depends on the maturity of the organization. But at first, if you don't have repeatable procedures, probably a great idea, like you're emphasizing here, is to make the supervisor to go out there with them, to observe, and then see if they have any problems with it or whatever, to make sure that it is valid and it is working.
All right, excellent. Now, we have the procedure. It's been approved. Do we have to train our staff on that procedure, or do we just start slapping it on a work order, attaching it to a work order, and hope for the best?
Attach it to the work order, but it's not hoping for the best. They're going to sign on that procedure. On the back, on the very last page, it should have condition is found for the whatever task that was on equipment. So condition is found for the equipment. Condition is left. And then the last one is what you're saying, any recommendations or changes to the procedure.
All right, excellent. So this is something we're going to update as we learn new things, as we uncover better ways of doing things, as we uncover new tolerances, right? This is a living, breathing document, correct?
Yeah. And as we have failures, you know, failures, if they're unacceptable, then we should pull the procedures out as we're doing root cause analysis and look at those procedures and say, does the procedures match what we want, the desired outcome we want?
All right, perfect. Now, are there any tools or techniques out there for developing these procedures, for writing these procedures?
I have not found any. I use a template that I created years ago that I use. And if anybody wants a copy of it, you know, I'd be glad to share it with them.
All right, excellent. I will put a link to that in the show notes so they can, you know, get in touch with you, request that if that's what they want. Now, where does the role of standards come into this? Can we pull standards for, you know, machinery alignment and use those as references when developing these procedures?
Yes, you need to have references on there, but I want to have those any specifications, anything, even steps, I want them attached to that work order. I don't want them to have to go find this book or, you know, go online and find it or whatever. It should be already attached to the procedure.
All right, excellent.
I'll give you an example. When we used to rebuild, you know, large equipment, like large overhead cranes, and we take them for a shutdown for a week, then every equipment we had a manual there. And we'd actually break it down, and we had the procedure with us, but the manual was there to help us in case we needed further instructions. Now, sometimes that's difficult because most of them may be electronically. But if you have it, then maybe put it on a tablet where it's searchable.
All right. So making sure that the technicians have all those additional references, it reduces the number of interruptions, the amount of time that they're looking for additional information, all those things, right? So we want to make sure they have those at their fingertips, correct?
Exactly. And we don't need to make it sound complex that it's not. We just need to keep it simple, make it repeatable, and use the philosophy we're going to crawl before we walk, and then we're going to walk before we run. So we're going to learn from this. And as we learn from it, we're going to make it better and better.
All right. Excellent. Now, what do you think makes the biggest difference in being successful with these procedures?
Leadership. Maintenance supervisors and maintenance managers being leaders. Stepping up to the plate, you know, making sure people are doing what they're supposed to do, coaching them, mentoring them. And then if required, it should be a rare, but discipline if required.
All right, excellent. So having that leadership, making sure people understand the expectation that they will be followed, coaching if they don't understand them, working with continuously updating those procedures so they're best out there. But it all comes back to that central piece of leadership.
Exactly. In fact, I created a presentation I did with recently, and it's called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective Maintenance Leader. And people can Google it online. I think it was published by Reliable Plant, hosted as a webinar by that, but you can Google it online or just type in 7 Habits of a Highly Effective Maintenance Leader, Ricky Smith, CMRP, and find it also.
All right, excellent. I will make sure to put a link to that in the show notes as well, so our listeners can just click on it. It'll take them right there. Now, if you had a magic wand, what is the one thing you would change in a typical maintenance procedure that you see in organizations?
Step-by-step instructions.
Do they normally not go step-by-step? They just cover certain points, or are they all over the place? What do you normally see?
They're all over the place. It's changed. They'll have a work order states. And you've got work order and work order instructions, but the work order will state change chain drive. And that's all. That's it. There's no instructions with it or anything. So depending on, if I don't have specifications, if I don't know the right way to do it, I've never been trained, then how am I going to do it? It makes it difficult. We're all going to do it differently.
Absolutely.
And 100% probability you're going to have human induced failures.
Yeah, if we don't provide them those step-by-step details, those specifications, yeah, we're going to have those maintenance-induced failures. We're going to have premature wear out. We're going to have all these different things that occur. Now, what is the one action you want our listeners to take away from the conversation today on procedures?
Start small, slow. Go after what I would do is walk in the plant and decide with senior technical leaders, I'm talking about at the plant, but also technicians and the planner, maintenance supervisor, and say, okay, which machine are we going to start at first, right? Procedures on. And that's what I would start. Now, the other option, I'll give you another option, is that if you have certain tasks that people do, like replacing belts, changeovers, stuff like that, have line-by-line procedures where people have to initial each step when it's accomplished.
All right, excellent. So we're going to use those senior technical leaders, figure out what machine we're going to work on. And if we have changeovers, all those types of things, we're going to set that up as well. So we get that repeatable startup. We're going to start up the equipment properly. It's going to run properly. But we require a check off of each of those steps as they're completed.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Ricky, where can people find out more about you? Where can they find all your webinars, all those different things that you do, your books and so on and so forth? And also, what is your favorite resource for maintenance procedures?
That's a good one. I've created a lot of them over the years. Most people don't use them. The companies that have succeeded greatly. It's a discipline, and people don't like discipline. And it's not a discipline, not as a bad word, but repeatability and then continuous improvement. But the best way to find information is Ricky Smith, CMRP. Whatever the topic is, the maintenance and reliability, just type it in and you may find something on there about me. But LinkedIn is probably the best place to go find it.
All right. Excellent. I will put a link to your LinkedIn page as well so people can easily connect to you, as well as some of your books like Rules of Thumb for Maintenance and Reliability Engineers. We'll make sure to link to those as well. So if people want to see those, grab them right away. We can do that and make it easy for them.
Sounds good.
Well, Ricky, I want to thank you for taking the time today to talk to us about maintenance procedures. It is one of those things that a lot of organizations, I feel, overlook. There's a huge opportunity to improve efficiency and reliability within organizations by having these good procedures. So thank you so much for talking to us about those today.
All right. Thank you, James. Have a nice day.
You too.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing the small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.